Hello, baseball fans, and welcome back another week, another edition of the Roster Rhetorical, episode number 40. Matt, this is a huge milestone. We've made it to 40 episodes.
It's our Bumgarner number.
Okay. Bumgarner wears 40. I'm sure we could have picked somebody else, but I'll just let you pick a giant. I know. I'll make you feel good about it. I was thinking, because you texted me yesterday, and we were trying to figure out what we were going to do for the show, and you wanted to do the show yesterday, or you suggested doing the show yesterday because you thought maybe it would be good to get some initial reactions from the trades. And I said, no, let's let it simmer. We'll come back on Tuesday and we'll give our big thoughts on the trade deadline and everything that happened. And now I'm sitting here and I've planned out the whole show. I have all the moves that we're going to talk about here. And it's a lot that we have to talk about.
A lot of stuff happened yesterday.
I'm kind of thinking we should have done a show yesterday and a show today. But in hindsight, I really can't go back and change it. So we're going to break down. We're not going to break down every trade. If you want to do that, my suggestion is go to the MLB Daily Dish website. The trade deadline tracker is the first post. It's linked. It's the big one once you go there. And Chris Cotillo did a wonderful job of putting all the trades in there, what each team got, with a link to the article with some more context, statistics, all that kind of stuff. Anything you could want out of these moves, you will get in these articles. So going there, everything is there, all in one big article. We're going to take a few of them, the big ones, obviously, and break them down here. But Matt, before I delve into all of these, and we're going to talk Giants and Mets, obviously, because both of our teams made big trades, and the Dodgers and some other stuff. But overall, what did you think of the trade deadline compared to last year in general? What was your overall thoughts about it?
I thought it was more interesting this year. I think I was a little disappointed in the fact that none of the big starting pitchers change teams. I really wanted to see a Sale deal get done, or one of the Rays guys other than Matt Moore. I'm a fan of that trade, but I really wanted to see what a package for Archer or Odorizzi or Sale would have looked like, because in this market that would have been, you know, probably the greatest package in any trade in history.
So I echo that sentiment. I was sort of surprised that we didn't get a Sale or an Archer move. I thought one team would, you know, sacrifice the big price that was associated with one of those guys, either the Dodgers or the Red Sox, or a mystery team that stepped in and made the big move. And while we did see some, you know, pitchers move, we saw Matt Moore, Ivan Nova, Francisco Liriano, I think what we're now going to see is, because this top tier of starting pitching, the Sonny Grays, Julio Teheran, the Chris Archers, the Chris Sales, all of these guys are still available, and it was a relatively slow deadline in terms of big names, a lot of minor deals that other teams did. I think we're setting up for a winter that is going to be rumor-filled and everything under the sun that could happen. I believe they're in Maryland this year.
No, I think they're in DC.
Oh, DC. They're close.
I was
in that area.
That's true. But yeah, I want to say that
it's so DC.
I'm checking right now. I'm pretty sure.
Fact check.
Yeah, it's Washington, DC.
So they're going to be in DC, and I think you're going to see a lot of stuff go down there. A lot of rumors. I think Chris Sale's name and Sonny Gray's name are going to be at the top of team's list. It wouldn't surprise me to see Teheran's name come back up in trade talks. I think bats are going to be on the move too. I think we are in for a big winter, and I think this trade deadline really set up for that with the way teams conducted business. Matt, where do you want to start here? You don't know what trades I want to talk about, so I
have no idea what trades you want to talk about.
Let's start. Okay, I'm going to try to go in some sort of chronological order. The day started mainly with the Dodgers acquiring Josh Reddick and Rich Hill from the Athletics in a deal that saw a bunch of prospects go back to Oakland: Frankie Montas, Grant Holmes, and Jarrell Cotton. Is that?
In my head, I was saying Jarrell, but I really don't know. To be honest, I'd never heard of that guy as a prospect until yesterday. So I can't be much help there.
So this was a deal that we thought the Dodgers were going to make. They had been linked to Reddick and to Hill. They were in the market for some starting pitching help with the plethora of issues that we've talked about on this show. Clayton Kershaw being down, Hyunjin Ryu not being healthy. They really have been scrapping together a rotation all year. They lost Alex Wood. So Rich Hill, who is still on the disabled list, but They expect him to be back and be able to be healthy. So that he's the guy that they're going to fill in there. And, you know, with all the talks about Puig and the debacle that has been, they wanted to get an outfielder. They did that. They got Josh Reddick. And, you know, subsequently, a couple hours later on during the day, they decided to option Yasiel Puig to AAA Oklahoma City, potentially signaling the end for Puig in L.A. Matt, your thoughts on the package that L.A. gave up for both Reddick and Hill, Montas and Holmes, two top 10 prospects, according to MLB Pipeline, if I am remembering yesterday, because I was looking at every team's top prospect system throughout the day, but I believe Montas and Holmes were both in the top 10.
Yeah, I think they are. And Holmes, as far as I know, he's a real starting pitching prospect. I've heard he's got an amazing changeup, at least right now. And, you know, for a kid in the minor leagues to already have a plus changeup, I think that's a really good sign, because usually you hear about that kind of being like a late addition to someone's repertoire. Montas has an electric fastball. His biggest problem is he has never been able to stay healthy, in his brief professional career. And then Cotton, I want to say Eno Saris, was talking about him having, a changeup of death. So, you know, we always talk about prospects and you know, what they're projected to be, but obviously we've seen people come out of the woodwork and, you know, out of nowhere. So, I'm sure the A's targeted him for a specific reason. So if I, you know, in next year we're talking about him in the Cy Young conversation, I can't say I would be too surprised just because of how weird baseball seems to be lately. But, I like the trade for the A's. Obviously Rich Hill and Reddick are both rentals, so they got quite the haul. And I really don't think it's going to matter that much for the Dodgers. I don't think it really helps their win curve all that much. Reddick is a real nice left-handed piece to add to that lineup. But as I always mispronounce this guy's name, Mike Petrelio pointed out that, you know, Puig was doing pretty well since coming off the disabled list. His defense had still been above average. And his bat was coming around. And if you even go farther back to the start of July, he had a slash line of 283, 389, 417 with a WOBA of 355 and a WRC plus of 126. So that whole story is really odd to me. Puig's time in LA has been such an up and down journey. It kind of makes sense to me that their time together should just be over at this point. Whether it's his personality, the front office, the coaching staff, you know, we could guess for days and days about what the issue is. But the marriage between Puig and the Dodgers seems to be over. And this trade for Reddick kind of seemed to be the nail in the coffin, at least for now.
And yes, he had been playing well since his return off the disabled list. But looking at his numbers as a whole, his OPS has dropped every season since he's come to the league. You add that in with his personality and antics, not really gelling with the locker room in the front office. And this has sort of been a situation boiling for the last couple of seasons now, to where we kind of expected this to happen at some point. And it appears as though the Dodgers have reached their limits. And look, I don't think they sent Puig down to AAA in the hopes that he's going to find his bat again and they'll call him back up. I mean, the guy was hitting fine since coming back from the disabled list. I think this is a marriage that is sort of, you know, getting toward its end, and it may end in an ugly divorce this winter. But, you know, if we're talking about bats that are going to be available this winter and teams that are going to look for potential buy low candidates to plug into their lineup, Yasiel Puig is going to be at the top of that list. This is a guy that teams can potentially get on the cheap this winter in a market that's going to have more bats than pitching. So the trade market for bats could be a little bit more rampant than we've seen in years past. So I don't think this is the last we've heard of Puig and the Dodgers sort of getting to their end. I think it's going to be quiet for a while, but once the winter rolls around, I think we're really going to start to see the Dodgers reach out to other teams, or other teams reach out to the Dodgers and start talking about a deal that maybe it'll get Yasiel Puig out of LA. The Dodgers front office and it's Andrew Friedman, correct, Matt?
Yes. Yeah.
Andrew Friedman actually helped the Giants on Monday. And I think Matt knows where I'm going with this, because Andrew Friedman was in the Tampa Bay front office before he moved over to LA. And while he was with the Tampa Bay Rays, he inked Matt Moore, to a rather team-friendly contract extension. He left for LA, and now the Giants have acquired Matt Moore on a very team-friendly deal that will now allow Matt Moore to torture Friedman in San Francisco for a while. Matt, I know you are very, very heartbroken, and your Twitter at the Original Bull is an indicator of this. You are not happy with the idea of no longer having Matt Duffy, but you seem to like the idea of having Matt Moore in the rotation. Is that an accurate description of your feelings today Tuesday?
That's definitely fair. I knew that the prices were high. Everyone knew that the prices were high this deadline. And I just didn't think the Giants were going to pony up anybody on the major league roster. I obviously knew that all of our prospects were fair game, and I was prepared to lose Arroyo and Beatty the second I heard that Matt Moore was heading to San Francisco.
Can I cut you off?
You can.
I just wanted to, because you mentioned Arroyo and Beatle was the other name?
Tyler Beatty.
Tyler Beatty. And I wanted to bring this up because is this an indication of how the front office views these guys as to be able to come in and fill Duffy's role right away? Because when you trade a guy like Duffy, who is, you know, he's struggling this year, but has proven that he can hit at the major league level. When you trade a guy like that away, you got Eduardo Nunez, but he's a rental. He's going to be done at the end of the year with them.
I think at the end of next year.
Oh, at the end of next year. Okay. So they have some flexibility to have him, but how much sort of faith does this show that the front office have in Arroyo and Beatty to be able to fill Duffy's shoes rather quickly and rather efficiently as well?
Well, Beatty is a starting pitcher, just to get that out of the way.
I'm sorry. I have another infielder in my mind for some reason.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Christian Arroyo is expected to be able to step in for Duffy maybe as soon as this year. I know he's in AA still, but Duffy actually had never played in AAA until last week. So it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility to see Arroyo jump AAA completely if they think he's ready to go. And for a while, it seemed that Arroyo was a prospect without a home, and they were talking about eventually moving him to left field. But after the Duffy trade was complete, both Evans and Sabian spoke to Arroyo's skill set as a major factor as to why they were okay trading Duffy, because they do have a replacement or someone that they believe can be a replacement coming up through the minor league system. And Evans did mention that he tried to do a prospect only deal with Tampa Bay. So I would imagine that the first iterations of that deal, at least from San Francisco's proposal, probably included Arroyo and maybe another prospect. So it would have looked something like, Chris, I can't remember what the final trade actually wound up looking like.
Just so you know, Chris Shaw was the name I was thinking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He was mentioned earlier in the trade.
That was why it was in my head, because I saw his name be floated around a little bit.
Yeah. So I imagine he was in there. Beatty might have been too. Although that one is, I probably have a hard time imagining Beatty being in the system or in that trade now, since Mejia and Bickford are both gone. It was definitely a surprise. I know a lot of Giants players were shocked. Brandon Crawford wrote a blog about how his heart dropped when he heard that Duffy was headed to Tampa Bay. His bat really kind of fell off this year, and I don't doubt that that he'll hit well with Tampa. But the thing I think I'm going to miss most is just his defense at third. He came up as a shortstop, and the Giants asked him to learn third base at the major league level, which is not easy to do by any stretch of the imagination. And he turned himself into a gold glove caliber defender. And if not for Nolan Arenado, he probably would have taken home the award last year. So Tampa Bay is getting themselves a premier defensive player who's going to shift back to shortstop. So it'll be really interesting to see what he can do there. And I obviously wish him the best of luck.
He was a shortstop that moved to third, played for the Giants. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, a lot. I think, you know, other than Brandon Belt, all of the Giants infielders have started, or at least were drafted as shortstops. Joe Panik was a shortstop out of St. Joe's in New York. Brandon Crawford was a shortstop at UCLA and obviously still is a shortstop. And Duffy was a shortstop at Long Beach State. And Christian Arroyo was a shortstop as well, who will, I imagine, exclusively start playing third base in the minor leagues.
This reminds me of my Road to the Show player in MLB The Show, who was a shortstop for the Giants. They asked me to play third, and that's what got me promoted to the big leagues.
Actually, you know what? I did the same thing. I chose to be a shortstop. Giants took me, and I was hitting something like 700 in the minor leagues, and I still hadn't gotten called up. So I switched to third on my own, and then I got called up something like the next day.
Yeah, they asked me to switch to third base because they wanted to get my bat into the big leagues. I switched. I played about a week there, and then they promoted me.
Yeah, so
seems like to be like the Giants' MO both in the fictitious MLB The Show world and in the real world.
Pretty much. So, you know, I'm a fan of the trade. You know, Duffy was a luxury, I guess, that they could afford to deal. And then the prospects that went back to complete the trade aren't. It's not going to kill the future. Assuming that more stuff is back, which Eno Saris wrote an article about, and I said this on Twitter, it felt like he wrote the article just for me because it made me feel a lot better after I got through the thing. But, you know, he's a fly ball pitcher, but that's going to play well in all of the NL West parks, obviously, except for Colorado. But his velocity is back up. His pitches are diving like they used to before he succumbed to Tommy John surgery. So I think this is a great ad. And you know, obviously I just hope it works out for everyone involved. I don't want to be, you know, 5 years down the road, seeing Duffy win MVPs in the AL and seeing Matt Moore sit on a bench somewhere in Richmond.
So the Giants pick up Matt Moore, the Dodgers pick up Reddick and Hill. But the team that seemed to have won the day, if you subscribe to the idea of winners and losers, in this sort of world of trading and drafting and all that kind of stuff, would be the Texas Rangers. This is a team that, you know, last year traded for Cole Hamels. They felt that they were close. They felt that they had something to build around with Yu Darvish, Adrian Beltre getting toward the end of his tenure. They wanted to build around that. And yesterday, right? My days are so confused. That was such a long day yesterday. Yesterday, traded for Carlos Beltran first, giving up three prospects, including their first-round draft pick in 2015, Dylan Tate, to get Carlos Beltran, which seemed to be a high price tag for Beltran. And then within minutes, it felt like 10 minutes later, they had a deal in place to get Jonathan Lucroy and Jeremy Jeffries, the reliever from the Brewers. Lewis Brinson, Lewis Ortiz, and a player to be named later are all in the deal that are going to head off to Milwaukee. So, Matt, the Rangers got Carlos Beltran and Jonathan Lucroy, two bats for their lineup. They didn't give up Yerkson Profar, Nomar Mazara, or Joey Gallo. Has to be considered a good day for them, right?
Oh, yeah. I said this on Twitter, too, but John Daniels deserves some sort of medal for being able to pull off Lucroy and Beltran without having to give up one of Mazara, Gallo, or Profar. I, you know, was sure that one of those guys was going to have to be gone to get Lucroy at least. And especially since they brought back Jeffress too, you know, that package had to be stronger. So I was really surprised to see Gallo remain with the Rangers. I thought he was as good as gone. I have an old roommate who's from Dallas, and I was texting him during the day, you know, updates. And I remember texting him like, oh, the Rangers just got, I said, Beltran done, Lucroy being worked on. I said, Rangers getting Lucroy, which means Gallo is gone. And then about 5 minutes later it was, oh, you know what? Gallo might not be gone. So that was a, you know, amazing string of moves for Daniels. I saw Mike Bates ponder on MLB on, you know, in one of his articles. I can't remember what the title was. He was wondering aloud whether or not John Daniels is MLB's best GM. I don't think you can give him that title yet just based off this one deal. He's had a few missteps, but at least, you know, for now, he deserves a ton of recognition for being able to pull off those moves.
If we're talking about general managers who should deserve praise after just this trade deadline, I think we would give that award to Brian Cashman, right? I mean, with what he had done, what he has accomplished, trading Miller, trading Chapman, trading Beltran, even trading Ivanova, getting the pieces back. In their top 15 prospects, just in the last week and a half, they've added four players in their top 15. So yeah, if we were going to give an award, Cashman would be the guy.
I wouldn't even give him the award for being the best GM based on the moves, but just for being able to convince his bosses that they should sell off. Because convincing Hal Steinbrenner that the Yankees need to rebuild and invest in the farm and give up on a season in July. That takes a lot of convincing arguments, and I'm still not entirely sure how he did it. It was undoubtedly the right move. The Yankees have needed to do this. You could see it coming down the pipeline a few years ago that they were getting way too old. They dealt a lot of their prospects. They didn't have any real bankable guys coming up. Obviously, they still have Greg Bird, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez. Those were guys that they had before.
Sanchez was just promoted, by the way.
And, you know, those are all three top prospects. Bird showed what he could do in 2015, 2016. Unfortunately, it was a lost season for him. Still haven't really seen what Gary Sanchez can do. So hopefully these next 2 months, we get a better idea of him. And Judge, I think he got hurt recently, but was putting up good minor league numbers. But none of those guys really had the star power that I want to say a lot of the guy. Obviously, comparing every farm system to what the Cubs used to have is unfair. But you know, when you remember those guys coming up, Baez, Bryant, Russell, Schwarber, everyone talked about them in terms of, you know, it was absolutes. They're going to be good. And I haven't really heard anyone talk about Bird, Judge, and Sanchez that way, where they're convinced that they're going to be major league, you know, all-star potential caliber players. So for Cashman to get all these guys, Frazier, I think, is the biggest get. You could probably argue that Gleyber Torres is up there too. So the Yankees have an amazing chance now to build a sustainably great team, and then they can spend that, you know, all that cash that they've got just laying in their pockets. They can go out and spend it on the free agent market, and you know, a couple of the classes that are coming up here after the 2016-17 offseason are going to be pretty incredible. So they should have a solid team in place that's homegrown, at least in some part. Obviously, I don't know if Frazier technically counts as homegrown or guys that you get via trades, but they're going to have guys that are cost controlled for years to come that should blossom into real productive major leaguers. And then they can go spend the money where they need to plug some holes.
For Yankee fans out there that are listening to the show, this is a weird place for them to be. I think a lot of Yankee fans, including the friends that I have back in New York that I've been talking with over the last week about all of these moves, they're in a weird state. They're not used to this idea of rebuilding and tearing things down and trading assets and not getting something back that's major league ready. I know I have a buddy, and if he's listening to the show, Logan, I love you, but he wanted them to address their starting pitching need, which is one of their glaring holes right now on their roster. And I explained to him that when you're making deals like this and you're trading guys like Chapman and Miller, guys that only play in a small percentage of your games and maybe throw one inning at most when they pitch, to go out and get guys that could be cornerstones of your lineup for years to come that can hit 20 home runs and hit 300, you do those deals. And this winter, if they can now go into talks with the A's for Sonny Gray, with the White Sox for Chris Sale. Heck, they could call up the Marlins for Jose Fernandez just to see. And now they have chips to deal to then address that need. So when you're dealing major league talent and trying to rebuild your team, you're not looking to fill needs. You're not trying to pick out positions that you think you desperately need in the minors. You're just looking to accumulate assets, and assets that you believe have value. And if they pan out for you, great. If they don't, they still have value, and you can use them to go out and fix your team with major league caliber talent later. And I think kudos to Brian Cashman for what he did. Like Matt said, he had to first convince the Yankee ownership and Hal Steinbrenner to be comfortable with making moves. But then he had to deliver in terms of getting back quality assets and talented prospects, and he hit an A+. I mean, if we were grading this assignment, it's an A+ for Brian Cashman, what he was able to get back for 2 months of Aroldis Chapman, a year and a half of Andrew Miller and Carlos Beltran. So kudos to him. Matt, I didn't do this on purpose, but we're going to finish the show talking about the Mets. I hope you're okay with that.
I think I'll manage to survive.
So the Mets, for the second year in a row, get a bat at the deadline, and this was a name that they were linked to last year. It was a name that they were linked to a little bit this year. Mets fans didn't think it was going to happen, didn't think it was a fit, square peg, round hole, but they acquired Jay Bruce from the Cincinnati Reds, giving up two pieces, infielder Dilson Herrera and left-handed pitcher Max Wotel, or however you pronounce it. They are going back to Cincinnati in the deal. All throughout the day, it was a done deal early in the morning, then medical concerns sort of stalemated it. We didn't know where it stood. We didn't know where the teams were, if they were agreeing to the deal. Were they working out the prospects? Were they walking away? It was very unknown. Then it was re-sort of thrown out there that the deal was done. It was close. It was Jay Bruce is going to the Mets. Still didn't know who was involved. Then the reported package going back to the Reds was all over the place. It was Nimmo and Herrera. Then it wasn't Nimmo. Then it was Herrera and Wodell. There was other names that were thrown around in the mix. I know I had mentioned Marcos Molina as a potential guy. There just names were flying all over the place, but it's a done deal. Bruce, New York, played tonight, went 0-for-4 in his debut. I'll start with this one because it's my team and I can sort of give the Mets fan perspective and then I can have Matt jump in here, but I said it in my kind of opening monologue, definitely a square peg in a round hole type fit. Bruce is a corner outfielder, which is kind of where they have a surplus right now. Curtis Granderson plays the corners. Yoenis Cespedes plays the corners. Michael Conforto plays the corners. That's three corner outfielders for two spots. Now they've added Bruce, so that's four corner outfielders for two spots. You have Cespedes, who's hurt right now. You don't have Juan Lagares. Alejandro Diaz is really a corner outfielder as well. Conforto's probably going to move to center if he can prove that he can hit, which seems he was 2-for-4 tonight. He's starting to get that back. So it may end up being where you have Cespedes go to center, Conforto play left, Bruce in right, and Granderson ends up being the odd man out. There's a lot of different configurations. Matt and I were talking before the show. Bruce in center has been talked about. That's not going to happen. If it does, it'll happen once, and Sandy Alderson will put the kibosh on that because Terry can kind of set the lineup, but Sandy has final say on that kind of stuff. In terms of the price, I think it's fair. I know myself and a lot of other Mets fans were very high on Dilson Herrera's stock. It's why we let Daniel Murphy go this offseason. The idea was Dilson was going to be the second baseman of the future. You just needed a stopgap for maybe one, two, three seasons at most, and Dilson would come in. The way he was handled this year, not getting promotions at times where he felt like the right guy to be called up, made it seem that they had soured on him and I don't know this for sure, but he's the guy that's going to Cincinnati, and Max Wodell is a young arm. He's 19, has some upside, but not going to be anywhere close in the next three seasons, so the Mets were fine dealing that away. So in terms of the price to get Jay Bruce for this season and next season, which they do, I think it's worth it. I think, if Dilson pans out, good for him, but I think they'll be able to fill that other ways without, sort of feeling the effects of trading Dilson. I'm just interested to see what this means about Cespedes and his contract, if he is going to opt out this winter, and if Bruce is sort of a reason to, or a way for the Mets to sort of damper the blow of Cespedes leaving. So now I'll turn it over to Matt since I talked for about 5 minutes and let Matt jump in here.
I was really surprised to see Dilson Herrera move, just because when the Mets let Daniel Murphy go, a lot of the justification you heard for that was because Dilson Herrera was in the pipeline and he should be ready to go. So I was definitely shocked to see that he was on the move. I did read that I guess they're now planning on potentially shifting Jose Reyes over to second next year. But that's also kind of assuming that David Wright is going to be able to handle third, again at all. And I really don't think you can ever count on him playing baseball again. I hope he does. And it would be really awful to see his career end this way. But I don't think you can count on David Wright at all at this point. But when they were talking about this trade initially, I think Michael Conforto's name came up. And to be completely honest, I was rooting for him to get traded. I think the Mets have treated him rather terribly in his brief career, whether it's just refusing to play him against lefties, sending him down. Obviously his numbers weren't good, but I mean, this guy had a wrist injury, and I believe he had a cortisone shot there.
Yes, he did.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Nope, he did.
And that's just going to zap your power. So the way they have treated Conforto has kind of confused me. I'm not sure how anyone is supposed to learn how to hit left-handed pitching if they're never going to see left-handed pitching. And this is a first-round talent. So you got to eventually let him play just every day. And to see him now seemingly get platooned is worrying. So I kind of had hoped that he would just wind up in Cincinnati and they would let him run wild, so to speak. And then hearing the Mets potentially throw him out in center field, that seems a little, the word just kind of went out of my brain. Careless might be the right word. Had he ever played center field in the minor leagues?
Conforto or Bruce?
Conforto.
I don't believe so. I know, I'm not entirely sure. He's basically been a corner outfielder. To piggyback off your point, his struggles against lefties, because of Justin Ruggiano getting hurt in last night's game, sort of typical for the Mets, basically, this season is to get hurt, they had to put Conforto into the game because Bruce hadn't arrived yet. So Conforto had to play against Sabathia, the lefty, and in that game got his first major league extra base hit against a left-hander. So that is a huge confidence boost for a guy that's hitting 220 this season to finally get that monkey off his back, get an extra base hit against a lefty. He had two more hits tonight, including a double, an RBI double, excuse me. So it's starting to come together, and if he continues to hit this way, and the last two games are indicative of him finally taking back his approach of going the other way, he is going to find his way back into the lineup now. Where he plays will be interesting. Cespedes is going to DH the next couple of days and is going to return to the lineup on Wednesday as the DH tomorrow. So with that, the outfield lineup to me is probably going to be Conforto in left, Granderson in center, and Bruce in right. And you look at that, and it's not the best defensive alignment. We can talk about Granderson being too old to play center, Bruce's struggles in right, but this is a team that has struggled for so much offense this season. They just need to get players out there that can swing the bat, and that's what Conforto, Bruce, and Granderson all do for you. So, you know, I think they're thinking right now is Conforto's going to play left for the next couple of days. Once Cespedes is ready to play, if the quad is healthy enough for him to go back into the field, I got to think he goes back to center. I really do. And I think Conforto goes back to left. And then Granderson's the odd man out with Bruce playing in right.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I kind of been thinking of is if Cespedes doesn't opt out of his deal, and if I was betting on it, I kind of would have to think that he would at this point, his season.
Really? I'm one of the few people that thinks he's staying, but.
He'll be 31 years old when the offseason starts. Right now, his slash line is 291, 365, 555 with a WRC plus of 147 and a WOBA of 385. And if you look at the available or what will be the available outfield options this offseason, there aren't that many great options. Gregor Blanco is going to be available. Chris Coughlin. Coco Crisp, Rajay Davis, Ian Desmond is probably going to be the bell of the ball there.
Josh Reddick,
let me get to the right.
He is a free agent at the end.
Okay, Josh Reddick. So Cespedes would immediately be, and Dexter Fowler is probably going to use that opt out. They have a $9 million mutual option, but I can't imagine that he would stay on a 1 year deal at this point. So if Cespedes reaches the market, he's going to be the most powerful outfielder. And he's had a great follow-up season to 2015. I know a lot of people were, including myself, were expecting him to return to, you know, closer to his 2014, 2013 seasons, but he's kept up at least offensively. His defense has been pretty atrocious this year, at least according to Fangraphs standards and I guess Chris Schubert's eyeballs. He's got a minus six DRS all in center field, which is close to a full win. So he's not going to approach that 6.7 F4 that he got last year, but 2.4 is not shabby. He'll probably wind up close to four at the end of the year. He's got 22 homers. So I really do think he's going to opt out. However, if he does not, I think Jay Bruce is a really interesting trade chip that the Mets should seriously consider because he really is not a National League baseball player anymore. I know Jay Bruce was never an amazing defender, but as he has aged, he has become atrocious. And he really, just like Dan Vogelbach had no place in the on the Cubs and in the National League, Jay Bruce is really destined to be an American League slugger. And, you know, he was almost traded to the Blue Jays earlier this year, and I think they still make a lot of sense with Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista reaching free agency after this year. he could be a great stopgap for them and give them time to figure out what their next move is if they can't bring back either of them or one of them escapes to another team. But the Mets definitely have some things to figure out.
This offseason is going to be some fun, I'll tell you that.
They've got a lot of things to figure out in the near future and in the not-so-distant future.
I think if you're a Mets fan, you know, and you woke up today, you still have Ahmed Rosario, you still have Dominic Smith, you still have Brandon Nimmo, and you still have Michael Conforto, the four pieces that you know, fans envision the future being built around the 2017, 2018, 2019 teams. So you wake up today, and you know what? If Bruce doesn't pan out, you've kept the four pieces that you think you need. So I think you have to be happy if you're a Met fan. You know, I tweeted yesterday, I don't think Bruce doesn't really change my outlook for 2016. I think it's very bleak with the way the team has played, the struggles that they've had, the injury troubles. But you know what? It's another option for them for 2017, right? It gives them sort of flexibility. If Cespedes decides to stay around and they still have Granderson for the final year of his deal and they have Conforto, well, guess what? You dangle Jay Bruce out there, you maybe get some prospects back of equal value to what Dilson Herrera and Wodell were to you, or Bruce is in a deal to get a second baseman or a third baseman to replace David Wright or to finally get a shortstop or something. I've talked about this, and it's a term that I've used on the show before, but flexibility is what allows you to put yourself in a position to win a championship. Having flexibility, being able to have money flexibility, and asset flexibility goes a long way, and I think the Mets have put themselves in a position to do that. Matt, wrapping up, anything else you want to get to?
I did think the funniest trade of the deadline.
Are you going to talk about the Marlins?
Oh no, that one was weird. I still don't understand why the Marlins.
I don't think you can actually do that. For those of you who don't know, the Marlins, when they traded for Andrew Cashner, they also got Colin Rea, I believe is how you pronounce his name, from the Marlins, or from the Padres, excuse me. And in his first start for the Marlins, he went 3 1/3 innings and left the game with an injury. So the Marlins apparently have a return policy on this guy because they just called up the Padres and said, take him back and give us back one of the prospects we gave. Luis Castillo, and I made the joke, the 40-year-old infielder, that did not go over well on Twitter. People did not get that. It was a struggle.
Yeah, and I really don't. No one has talked about it. I was talking about it on Twitter with a guy named Jeff Long who writes for Baseball Prospectus. Neither of us really understand why that needed to happen. I mean, presumably they would have had to, unless they're just complete idiots, looked at the medicals on Rea and signed off on it. So I don't understand why the Padres have to pay or to give back Castillo, who, from what I understood, was the prospect that they really had their eye on. So that was just really bizarre. I hope down the road we hear what happened with that. Maybe the Padres kind of mentioned it to the Marlins, said, hey, we have been worried about Reyes' elbow, so if something happens, we'll work with you. That's a complete guess. That's really the only thing I can think of. But the trade that I was actually thinking of was the one between the Angels and the Twins,
in which
Hector Santiago was exchanged for Alex Meyer, Ricky Nolasco, and Cash. I just don't understand what the point of that trade was for either side. I guess the Twins get rid of Ricky Nolasco's contract or at least some of it. You know, he's not going to help. Ricky Nolasco is not going to change the Angels' fortunes. Giving up Hector Santiago or getting Hector Santiago for the Twins isn't going to change anything. They're really the same pitcher to me. I believe Alex Meyer used to be a prospect. I think his stock has fallen in recent years with some subpar production at the major league level. I'm checking up right now.
A former top pick for the Angels, or for the Twins, excuse me.
For the Twins, yeah. You know, he has great minor league numbers in parts of 4 or 5 seasons. Actually, he was drafted by the Nationals, which I did not know. But he's been atrocious at the major league level. However, that's in under 7 innings of work. So he could obviously still turn it around. But that was such a weird trade to me. The Angels are such a weird team in general. I mean, they've got an owner who's a billionaire who just refuses to spend money. And Billy Epler, you know, who came from the Yankees, who never really had to deal with as strict a budget, was just forced to dumpster dive this year and waste yet another season of Mike Trout's Hall of Fame worthy career so far. So instead of going out and getting these big guys to come fill the rotation, they're turning to Ricky Nolasco. And of course, former San Francisco Giant Tim Lincecum, who was not good again in his last start. So there you go.
I was wondering if you were going to work it in, and then you started talking about the Angels, and I said, okay, he's got a perfect segue here. So you delivered. I'm proud of you. That was good.
Thank you.
He's not doing very well. They're gonna cut him soon, right? I mean,
I don't understand why he's still on the team. Like, I know that they just need guys to eat innings, but at least give some minor leaguer a look or take a flyer on someone on waivers. He's been so bad. It's I don't want to say
sad.
I don't want to say embarrassing, but yeah, sad is the right word. If you had told me in 2010 that Matt Cain and Tim Lincecum would both be awful major league pitchers and Brian Wilson would not be in the major leagues at all, I probably would have, you know, slapped you in the face. But this is the reality that we live in, and I really hope that Timmy figures it out. I just don't know how he's going to do that with an 87 mile per hour fastball and about zero control.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for us. We've wrapped it all up for you in a nice little ball. We'll be back next week. I don't know what we're going to talk about. I'm kind of hoping that we have something to sort of grasp on, or it's going to be 30 minutes of just trivia with Matt. Because I think I'm actually going to announce it now. Trivia will return next week, guys. Last 2 weeks have been pretty busy with Cotillo on last week, and now this week kind of wrapping everything up. So trivia will return next week. As always, guys, multiple ways to follow the show and get the show. Easiest is iTunes. Subscribe there and leave a rating while you're there. Both of those things really help us out. They help you out as well. So we would appreciate it if you did that. If you're not an iTunes user or you have an Android, any podcasting app that you use on your phone will work. You just search the Roster Rhetorical, and it's there. If you're someone who likes to watch or listen to the show, excuse me, on your computer, desktop, while you're at work or something, blogtalkradio.com, you can search MLB Daily Dish or the Roster Rhetorical. Both will show up. They'll bring up the show with all the shows there, including the most recent one. And at the bottom of every MLB Daily Dish article, the podcast player is there as well. I mentioned Matt's Twitter earlier, at the Original Bull. Mine is at Chris R. Schubert. We tweet out podcast stuff, articles, all the stuff you can think of, we are tweeting out all day long. So Matt, it was a good one, man. Thanks for hanging out.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I know. You've been my co-host for 40 episodes, so you're kind of a staple at this point. But all right, guys, enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next time.